This is Bill Munhausen with another episode of the What Makes Sense podcast. If there's a title to this episode, it might be Problems We Might Easily Avoid. Or to put it more bluntly, what are you, an idiot? That's the question Kevin O'Leary asked in a recent podcast when he addressed the irrational behaviors of finance-stressed Americans. You might know O'Leary from his role on the Shark Tank TV show, where he helps evaluate business proposals from guest entrepreneurs. He has that role because of his business expertise, but O'Leary realizes that business success begins with personal choices. Stop buying coffee for $5.50, O'Leary said in a podcast. It's a rant against the modern obsession with expensive coffee. Specialty coffee didn't seem to exist before Starbucks burst upon the scene, but now there are coffee shops and coffee drive-thrus proliferating, even in small towns like Camdenton, Missouri. Specialty coffee shops make perfectly good sense in metropolitan areas where higher individual incomes allow residents to waste money in favor of convenience. But the intrusion into rural communities harms lower-income residents. O'Leary claims that a lot of Americans making their first $60,000 in their early careers piss away about $15,000 a year on unnecessary purchases. Perhaps the appeal is that lower-income people want to feel like they can afford a cup of coffee costing 10 times more than what they can brew at home. But O'Leary asserts that an extra $15,000 a year could be life-changing for those folks. Now, before you go doubting the math, let me clarify that the amount of wasted income is considerably less in rural America, more like $7,000 a year, because costs are lower. Nevertheless, you can see where O'Leary is coming from. However, I'm also just talking about eating out, and Americans waste money on lots of things. People in rural America waste money on convenience foods and services, like internet access, that ironically costs more than in the cities. In spite of our claims about being conservative, rural Americans tend to chase luxuries just as much as their urban counterparts do. O'Leary's advice is not meant to be a put-down, but rather to encourage Americans to preserve their wealth by spending wisely. He sees hard times ahead for average Americans due to forces beyond their control, so his recommendation to rein in our daily spending is important. Here's another story that hits closer to home for me. When we were young, my wife and I were propagandized about the looming population explosion, and we decided to do the responsible thing and stop after two children, along with millions of other Americans who decided to have smaller families. Compare that to the dozen or so children previous generations had, and you can see that the population explosion would be well under control. Now Elon Musk is warning about the unintended consequences of having fewer children, the threat of population decline. The billionaire has been sending alerts about it for several months. His warnings were confirmed recently by China's first population decline in more than six decades. The country's population had doubled since the 1960s to more than 1.4 billion people today. But in 2022, the number of births in China was 9.56 million, the National Bureau of Statistics reported. At the same time, 10.4 million deaths were recorded. The drop in the population was 850,000 people. This is a first since 1960 and 61, when government policies led to a famine that began in 1959 and killed tens of millions of people. But that was an anomaly, and the new report represents a trend. The average number of children a woman bears during her lifetime has sharply dropped during this period. The data shows this. It went from 4.7 children in average in 1960 to 2.3 children in 2020. Now, some people will think that fewer people in the world might be a good thing. And to some extent, it can be a good thing, but at some point, too good of a thing becomes a bad thing. A recent study projects that the world's population will go into decline after 2060 and has the potential to be an extinction event. However, there are cultural layers to population decline. Decline is most extreme in affluent Western nations, while population increase is occurring among other segments of the world population. For example, and not the only example, Muslim Arab birth rates are radically higher. Is this a strategic trend influenced by Muslim doctrinal goals to convert the rest of the world? Or is it more influenced by the culture's family values? I'm not sure that anyone knows for sure. Nevertheless, overall population decline is the trend that could reach a tipping point where no amount of effort can reverse the end of the human race. Ironically, the same people who warn about climate change as leading to extinction don't share the same feelings about population decline. One Twitter user wrote, "I don't necessarily disbelieve it, I just don't have a problem with it. Maybe others feel the same." Another user said, "You can't force it. If people don't want babies, they just aren't going to have them. Forcing people to have kids would be a violation of human rights. Caring for kids is a huge responsibility. Your responsibility for teaching them to be good humans. If you don't have it in you, you don't." That is the most disturbing aspect of the population decline story. What do you do with a population that consider themselves unqualified to raise children? These are Twitter technicians, conceivably intelligent people, who claim they don't have it in them to make the next generation good humans, while also working for a company that has historically manipulated its platform to influence its users to be better humans. Most analysts suggest that selfishness, rather than incompetence, is motivating people to remain childless. I suppose it's the obvious end result of a consumer social media society for which the highest goal is personal satisfaction. I read an article recently about what adults have chosen to not have children. One man wrote, "I've always wanted kids, but I've never found anyone worthy of having kids with." Well, that doesn't sound too egotistical or not, does it? "Now that I finally married a stable, intelligent woman at age 50, I really don't want or need a 7-year-old to be responsible for upon my retirement that is approaching. Although I will always have the desire to be a dad, I'm intelligent enough to know that I have responsibility to be a good one, and I no longer have the energy or the patience to do so." A woman wrote, "I'm 41 and have zero regrets over having no children. My free time is mine to do as I wish, and I'm able to save aggressively toward retirement. I'm even more thankful that I never had children after going through a divorce, as there is nothing tying me to my ex-husband. It is much easier to heal and move forward with life when you can have no contact with anyone else." I don't think you can avoid seeing the self-centeredness in these quotes. With all the pressures put on people by modern society, it's very challenging to maintain any kind of relationship with another person, let alone a fruitful marriage or something as altruistic as raising a future generation. Children are now seen as an extra burden on an already stressful life. This is very different from the past, when children were seen as an asset for the family. Children were free to help on the farm. Even in the cities, children filled such lower-income roles as delivering newspapers or shining shoes for their more affluent neighbors. Unfortunately, the do-gooders of yesteryear thought that children were being exploited and instituted child labor laws that effectively removed children from being productive family members. Today's children are just video game players with nothing to contribute to the family, a modern trend that harms children as much as their unwilling parents. Although children might want to be lazy when asked to do chores, they still have a need for meaning. This is a wake-up call for modern American families who need to reevaluate how children are shielded from the march toward adulthood. We need to make children great again. At least some childless adults are approaching a childless old age with regrets. One person wrote, "It led to an uncomplicated life with less than usual financial difficulties. Now that I am 62, I can see some lonely times ahead, especially if anything happens to my wife." We must always keep in mind that God instituted families when he urged Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply. The fruit of their union, sons and daughters, is built into our spiritual DNA, and those who yield to the selfish impulse to remain childless face a very empty future. Here's a change of pace. You've heard it said that we should trust the science, and it doesn't matter what the subject is. There is now a phenomenon called scientism, treating the pronouncements of scientists with religious fervor. According to Wesley Smith, chair and fellow at the Center on Human Exceptionalism, and an author of 14 books, science and medical journals have become highly ideological on many of the most important and contentious societal issues of the day, ranging from global warming to gender ideology to critical race theory to virtually everything woke. A climate scientist recently has written that he pulled his punches in a climate change article in order to be published by the prestigious journal Nature. Patrick T. Brown's article is titled, "I Left Out the Full Truth to Get My Climate Change Paper Published." Brown added, "I knew not to try to quantify key aspects other than climate change in my research because it would dilute the story that prestigious journals like Nature and its rival Science want to tell. It's critically important for scientists to be published in high-profile journals. In many ways, they are the gatekeepers for career success in academia. And the editors of these journals have made it abundantly clear, both by what they publish and what they reject, that they want climate papers that support certain pre-approved narratives, even when those narratives come at the expense of broader knowledge for society." This is not a condemnation of science, but most of us don't get science from the actual scientists. Our science is filtered through layers of ideological bias, so we can't trust the science, or at least what masquerades as science. When someone says to trust the science, they're really telling you to defer to someone else's opinion, and you shouldn't buy that line. If the person can't explain the issue themselves, the command to trust the science is a smokescreen. Another series of articles that came across my desk all relates to the unabridgeable divide between believers in God and atheists. We'll start with UFOs. UFO chatter continues to circulate thanks to the Pentagon's recently released report about them. Are they satellites, experimental aircraft, or maybe, just maybe, aliens from another planet? Space travelers. Well, none of the above, according to Pastor Jack Hibbs of Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills in California, one of Key Radio's content producers. Hibbs said that he believes all of the documented UFO activity dating back to the Roswell incident in 1947 is demonic in nature. That's definitely a stretch for atheists and agnostics, because it's an interpretation that runs contrary to their naturalistic perspective. While it is a niche position in both evangelical circles and UFO study circles, the idea that UFOs are demonic entities isn't unheard of. Pentagon whistleblower Luis Elizondo says that the belief in demonic origin is held by some high-ranking national security officials. Elizondo even recalls a time when one senior official told him to stop investigating UFOs and instead pick up his Bible, saying that you should know these things are demonic and we should not be pursuing them. Apparently, there are Bible believers in high places. The choice between aliens and demons is almost exclusively a religious perspective. If you don't believe in the biblical explanation, what remains is space travelers. If you believe in the Bible, demons must be real and unexplained phenomenon may be demonic. Secular media is quick to ridicule Christians, but I suggest we look at plausibility. How reasonable is it to believe that travelers from another planet could visit the Earth regularly for 80 years and remain basically undiscovered? This is where some of our influences come from popular culture. Star Trek's Gene Roddenberry invented the Prime Directive in part to explain UFO secrecy. He included episode plots in which the Enterprise visited primitive planets, like ours, and kept their presence hidden, so their work wouldn't affect the planet's society. However, even in Star Trek, accidents would happen and the locals would become aware of their alien visitors. This is where I lose it with most conspiracy theories that involve secrecy. We humans just aren't good at keeping secrets. For a week, maybe, but since 1947, no way. The alien visitor theory of UFOs requires too much faith against all odds. Supernatural demons at least have the stuff to remain hidden from natural experience. That's why we need to push back against any ridicule from the atheists, because it's faith against faith, and Christians have a plausible story to tell. Here's another story highlighting the lack of understanding between atheists and Christians. The White House blasted new speaker Mike Johnson's suggestion that the human heart is to blame for mass shootings after a gunman in Maine killed 18 people. This seems to me like a strange thing to blast, since it is a basic Christian doctrine. Does a spokesman from the White House really not understand that? According to the Bible, all men are sinners, descendants of the original sin of the first man and woman. What Speaker Johnson was getting at is that sinners murder people, and that guns are merely the mechanism. Deputy Press Secretary Andrew Bates said in a statement, "We absolutely reject the offensive accusation that gun crime is uniquely high in the United States because of Americans' hearts." He goes on to advocate gun control, surprise, and Bates' comments are measured to reject the Christian explanation. Bates clearly doesn't understand that laws are made to control people and not to regulate inanimate objects. No progress will be made in reducing violence and crime until we deal with the human component by encouraging all citizens to accept the lordship of their creator. But then again, atheists don't believe in a creator. The biblical concept is clear. Romans 1:25 reads, "They traded the truth about God for a lie, so they worshipped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise." This brings us to another story about House Speaker Mike Johnson. Some atheists are particularly creepy. As Stephen Colbert's monologues continue to ridicule Mike Johnson, the new Speaker of the House. Colbert zeroed in on Johnson's literal interpretations of the Bible and how they influenced his politics. According to Speaker Johnson, anyone curious about his stance on anything should simply pick up the Bible. The late-night TV host challenged that assertion by asking if Johnson would tell the rich to give all their wealth to the poor before going on to cite more extreme examples of how society should operate according to the Old Testament. Apparently somebody, either Colbert or the writer of the article, doesn't understand that Jesus was in the New Testament. Actually, I don't think there would be a New Testament without Jesus. However, the deeper concern is that Colbert doesn't understand Jesus' teaching about charity. He also doesn't understand that Jesus had lots of concerns about the wealthy, who put all their trust in worldly goods. It's not an extreme view because we all see how delusional the uber-wealthy can be. Colbert's monologue also called out Johnson's past comments that misrepresented Thomas Jefferson's views on the separation of church and state. Colbert said, "If you let church into your politics, you end up with guys like Mike Johnson representing the church to young people, and they're all going to say, 'No thanks, Jesus,' no matter how fun it is at Youth Pastor Ricky's Leviticus karaoke night." What were Jefferson's views on separation of church and state? Jefferson believed that government should never interfere with which Christian denomination you follow. There should be no government-sponsored denomination. Colbert also reported that Johnson helped get funding for an organization that believes Earth is only 6,000 years old. The funding was for a Noah's Ark amusement park where visitors could learn, among other things, that dinosaurs were on the Ark. Colbert jokingly agreed with the premise, suggesting that early humans had dinosaurs as pets. We should always keep in mind that Colbert is a comedian who gauges what will make his audience laugh. His opinions aren't intended to be taken seriously. Colbert is also a Catholic who has shared how his faith informs how he lives his life. Unfortunately, mainstream Catholicism and Colbert would never suggest that the Bible be taken literally, or that it should influence their opinions. What a strange idea that your deepest faith would not shape what you believe. The author of the Colbert article wrote, "So while it is a bit surprising to hear Colbert mock someone for their religious beliefs, it isn't coming from a place of malice. Instead, the comedian simply points out the hypocrisy he sees in people like Mike Johnson, who want their religion in the entire country's political system." What an amazing statement. Of course Colbert ridicules Mike Johnson out of malice. That should be evident to everyone. But liberals never want to admit malice. They want to be viewed as faultlessly analytical rather than hateful. Then there is the comment about Mike Johnson's hypocrisy. It is exactly the opposite of hypocrisy. Hypocrisy would be Colbert's claim to a personal faith, but not using that faith to inform his public life. Hypocrisy is being a closet Christian. Mike Johnson, on the other hand, is consistently applying his faith to his public work. That's what you should demand of every public figure. The left likes to invoke the boogeyman of government ruled by a religion, but government will always have religious people participating, both godly ones and atheists. Both apply their faith to government. Now for a little walk through history, or perhaps I should say, when history becomes history. The statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee that once stood in Charlottesville, Virginia, was secretly melted down at a ceremonial event. Why secretly? The recent secretive ceremony was conducted by people who wanted to ensure the safety of the perpetrators because they knew public sentiment was against erasing history. The Washington Post reported that due to past threats and worries about legal action, the project went to great lengths to keep itself secret until now. The article made note that Professor Jelaine Schmidt, who directs the Memory Project at the University of Virginia Karsh Institute of Democracy, said she felt like she was preparing for an execution of sorts. There is some irony, or is it irrationality, in the idea of executing an inanimate object. To add insult to injury, the melted remains of General Lee will almost certainly be turned into some form of woke art. Swords into Plowshares, a project led by Jelaine Schmidt and Charlottesville's Black History Museum executive director Andrea Douglas, will turn bronze ingots made from molten Lee into a new piece of public artwork to display it in Charlottesville. They made arrangements for Lee to be melted down while they started collecting ideas from city residents for the new sculpture. NPR also covered the event and credited Swords into Plowshares for its efforts to create a more inclusive public art installation. I can't help but think that an injustice has been done. Fuel for the Charlottesville event included a Unite the Right rally in 2017 that resulted in violence. But the trigger event was the movement to remove statues that some people found to be offensive. We should stop thinking that historical statues like General Lee have socio-political objectives. They are simply acknowledgments of past events that must be remembered. The vast majority of people who passed by the statue of Robert E. Lee didn't say to themselves, "Yeah, I wish we still had slavery." Some might not know the history, and others might question why the man was remembered, but it would be an opportunity for a parent to talk to a child about the evils of the past and how far we have come. Removing statues is like burning books or banning someone from social media. It forcibly suppressed access for people to learn. Perhaps the people of Charlottesville like it that way, to burn books and melt statues. But we in the Ozarks must be better than that. We must always guard against anyone who restricts freedom of conscience and our right to learn. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, go out and do good.